Commons Conversations is a series of interviews in which campaigners share their experiences and insights into activism, learning in movements, and radical history. Produced by the Commons Social Change Library, episodes in the fourth series cover multicultural and First Nations voices from the climate movement, regional and rural organising, artivism, fierce vulnerability and radical resilience, the fight against corporate disinformation, campaigns countering the far right, and more. The 2025 to 2026 series can be heard on Saturday afternoons between 1 and 2pm in December and January on 3CR, or found as a podcast at 3cr.org.au/actingup or via commonslibrary.org. Welcome to Commons Conversations. In today's episode, digital campaigner James Clark chats with Mar Garcia-Sanz, former Secretary-General of the European Green Party and current co-director of the European Centre for Digital Action. The pair discuss how the far right has successfully used digital tools to engage with dissatisfied citizens and what it will take for progressives to win back this terrain.
To kick things off, maybe introduce yourself and tell us a little bit about the European Centre for Digital Action.
Yes. So, my name is Mar Garcia. I am Spanish. I was born in the province of Barcelona. So I'm a kind of like a city girl, but not really, because my city is a big city, but it's not Barcelona. Okay, it's just beside 20 kilometers away. Anyway, so I'm a politician. I'm a political animal. I've done politics all my life, and I love politics. I'm a very person that believes that politics is the best way, even if it's imperfect, that we have to organize ourselves. So I claim the value of politics whenever I have a chance, because right now it's so discredited. But we don't have another system. We can kill each other, and then it's kind of like war. But then if we want to organize ourselves, we do it through politics. So I want to claim that the issue is that not everybody's fit for politics. And I think that is also a little bit of a controversy. But the same way that not everybody's fit to be a hairdresser, and not everybody's fit to be a doctor. So you do need a certain vocation and skills to do politics, and it's unfortunate that people that do not have them are also doing politics. Said that, what is my trajectory? I've been doing this politics from a different level. I was for 12 years in the city council of Barcelona, so we were actually implementing policies and trying to have an impact on people's lives. I think the local level is a very, very nice level, and it should be mandatory for all politicians, because this is where you deal with real people and where you encounter the difficulty of managing, you know, what is managing? Well, trying to get things done and trying to people to agree how these things are being done. So, I was for 12 years there, and it was a very, very nice learning. Then I jumped to the European level, which is also a level that is challenging, because what's Europe? Europe is a continent, but what's the EU? The EU is a political project that is unfinished, and it's at the very initial level. So, for me, the 9 years that I was in Europe, in Brussels, as the Secretary General of the European Green Party, were also a nice opportunity to contribute to the growth of the European Union as a political project. And even if we're far from where we would like to, at least, I'm a great defender of the EU, in the sense that, again, it's the best system that we have within the continent to organize and to be joined. Right now is a bit is terrible, because the majorities in the EU are far from my values. So they're very center right majorities, and extreme right is occupying more. And by this, is the values that they represent are far from the values that I would like or that I find that I am close to. But that's the way it is. I'm a great defender of the EU, and as a political project that needs to be readjusted. And then for the last 3 years, I decided to leave the party politics, and then I jumped into the ECDA, the European Centre for Digital Action, because I understood that nowadays, with the arrival of social media and the digital arena in our world, we had to adjust on delivering the political message to our citizens, and we had to improve this, and that progressives were doing really, really, really bad. I don't think progressives have understood the role of digital in our lives, and they haven't understood in the political world. So that's what I'm trying to do, trying to change people's mind within the progressive world and adjust and optimize the arrival of and the benefits and the challenges that the digital world poses in our lives.
That was a wonderful introduction to kind of who you are and how you ended up in this position and doing this work and some of the values that drive that. I'm really struck by the way you're talking about the politics as a vocation and that passionate defense of politics. And I think something that has come up a lot in conversations I've had with people around the need to engage in democracy and actually rebuilding that muscle of engagement in our democracy and participation in our democracy as being really, you know, vital to the outcomes that progressive politics is looking for. And I think that I really love the energy that you're bringing to sort of, you know, politics is not a dirty word. It's a thing we need, you know, we need representatives to do this and you know, we need good you know, good suitable representatives.
Exactly, agree, fully agree.
But you mentioned that the sort of coming into this digital work and that progressives are doing quite poorly in that space. And I wanted to ask you to elaborate a little bit on why you think that is, and what do you mean when you say that?
Yes, so basically, I think that the changes that those instruments have brought into our life, and I don't mean the phones, but I mean the accessibility to the information. The phones are just, the means to access to a ton of information. It could be phones, it could be in the laptop, but like the what the digital world poses into our lives is a revolution. We were used to different timings. When we wrote a letter, it took 2 weeks until this letter arrived to the person that we were addressing it. Now we have an instant message and we are in this conversation. So the challenges that the digital world has posed on our life have changed everything, have changed the media, have changed the way that we communicate, have changed the way we work, have changed everything. And they have also changed politics. And my humble experience is that the people with values very different from ours. So, because when I talk about the right and the far right, it looks like they are like, just another like family out there. No, there is people with a specific understanding of life and with a specific goal. So the people that want to own or that want to be the bosses of our society for their own benefit, and those are, the people that rep or the values that represent the far right, especially. These people understood the impact that the digital world had in our life, like earlier than we did, or at least they understood the benefits that they could extract from it earlier than progressives. Progressives faced the digital revolution as, oh, it's coming. We need to regulate. We need to just treat as another kind of like a, as another kind of like progress. Yes, but the progress was so mind-blowing that the scale was not somehow perceived. And at least I'm going to focus myself on the political arena. At least in the political arena, progressives didn't understood that, the tempos, the change in the tempos, the change in the access to the volume of the changes was so huge that this was having an impact on how people wanted to engage in politics. And somehow the far right for 10 years have been using the capabilities or the potentialities of the digital arena to engage people in politics, to listen to them, to not really to listen, but to channel their emotions. That's what I think that they understood very often. So, and somehow progressives were anchored in an analog world of understanding. So, for good or for bad, representative democracy allowed a way of doing things. And this kind of solidified, yeah. And big parties understood, oh, dear citizens, trust me, I'm going to ask you for your trust once every 3, 4 years, 5 years, and then I'm going to stop talking to you because I'm going to be doing my job, yeah. So, and I'll come back to you in 4 years. And this solidified, and this brought a lot of bad things in our representative democracy system. And at a scale, this was not changed. There were some initiatives of direct democracy here and direct democracy there, and blah blah blah, and participatory budgeters and all this. But at a scale, this didn't change. And digital tools allow to change this, yeah, allow to open for participative ways in this representative democracy. And the far right has understood this. The progressive world hasn't. So my experience is that big progressive parties are still on this one-way talking to citizens and are struggling to open up spaces for having citizens having a say on the way that they do politics and inviting them on the way they do politics. And the far right, they have at least offered channels for engaging, which doesn't mean they're inviting them to do their politics, which doesn't mean they're inviting them to co-decide, but they have understood that, they have to offer channels to engage emotionally with what they say.
Yeah, that's really, I think, really interesting. And I think I'm as you're talking, I'm reflecting on sort of so early on this sense in like 2008, actually. So I'm thinking about Obama and the success of the Obama campaign and a lot of like that storied digital campaign. And I know that, at least in Australia, which obviously absorbs a lot of US content, a lot
Yes,
of US
the whole
culture.
world, of course, yes.
And unfortunately, we have no defenses against it because we're English-speaking land, so it just floods in. But also that we had some early successes in Australia, GetUp being a really interesting example early on, and like obviously that model start, like open organizations are all around the world now. But I distinctly remember through that period sort of a sense of complacency amongst progressives that like the internet was going to create this sort of like digital, it's just going to. Something about this technology is going to be inherently progressive was sort of the energy that this is going. And I think some of it was just, with a bit of hindsight, some of this was just internet company propaganda about like, this sort of libertarian fantasy in a lot of ways about what the internet was going to result in that I think progressives got a bit caught up in. And then I think then that was the first decade. And then now like the more recent decade has really shown that was not a misjudgment. Actually, the right has a, and I would argue, and I'd love to get your thoughts on this, a sort of a structural advantage when dealing with a lot of these platforms. And it's something I wanted to talk a bit about as well. And maybe thinking about, certainly I've been reflecting in this last couple of years of like as Elon Musk's purchase of Twitter and sort of turning that into just a, right-wing abusive hellscape. And a place, that I used to, that, and I remember it was a nexus of a lot of leftist organizing was on these platforms, and he managed to not just take away this sort of like town square, but took away a place for progressives to organize. And as I feel a bit of an internet refugee as I float around trying to find different platforms and try where do I where what's my home on the internet anymore? And I guess it just feels like I'm really noticing that sense that like the corporate hold on social media and this drive to push rage and anger and keep people engaged on these platforms is stronger than it's ever been. And I'm curious about sort of your reflections on that. Do you agree? Do you think that the right has a bit of a structural advantage in this space? And is there something we can, or what can we do about that?
I totally agree. I mean, when I go and try to train progressives, I try to change their mindset of the internet is like the public agora. No, the internet is not the public agora anymore. Not anymore. It has never been because, yes, it's a neutral space, let's say. But first of all, governments need to guarantee that you have access. There is already a first condition to be public agora. So can everybody access it with the same in the same way? Probably not, because are the infrastructures for your internet access kind of guaranteed or not? So second, the instruments. So the traffic that goes in the internet is in the hands of private corporations. So they're businesses. They're businesses. So when you enter a mall, You enter a private property, yeah? And whatever the rules that are in this mall, the owner of the mall defined the rules, yeah? So if they say you cannot eat ice cream in my mall, you cannot eat ice cream in my mall because that's a private property. So people do not get that Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, TikTok. Those are private properties and they have some rules. And we confused, progressive confused that, this was a public agora for too long. And first of all, we weren't quick enough to regulate because this was business. And why, if we regulate for the public or for the common benefit, the businesses, so we regulate health businesses, we regulate to protect people, yeah, from abuses. Why didn't we regulate the businesses of within the digital world? Yeah. So at least in Europe, we have GDPR, which means data belongs to you because, those kind of like private businesses in so social media were using our data, but that's a resource that belongs to us. It's re for a European when you go into the US, and I don't know exactly how it's in Australia, it's just so mind-blowing that my research, my data, my behavior, you're using it and I'm giving it for you for free. What the hell? Yes. So there was no a like proper regulation to protect, the resources of the citizens against these businesses. So that's also, by the way, one of the main goals, I think, from the big US platform owners to deregulate the little regulation that we have in Europe with DSA. And I think that this is one of the strategies that there is behind of the attacks in Europe. I hope that Europe stands up and understands that their sovereignty and their freedom is also based on the capacity of, protecting citizens' resources and in this case, citizens' data. So going back to your question, I think that the far right understood, okay, how can we also benefit from this business and also or somehow partner also with these businesses because they do share values. I want to also put that the owners of the platforms do share values and life visions as the far right parties and somehow the center right parties that are giving in on some of their values. And then how could we benefit of your rules, dear platforms, to gain the trust of the citizens and because they're in your private properties. So let's kind of like convince them to go towards our values. So I don't think I want to deny, that people are stupid. People are not stupid, but the world is very complex and people do survive a lot of difficulties in their daily life, yeah? Because the system is not the fairest one in which, in general terms, in which we live. So it's very hard to understand all this complexity. And and they're in the mall and they have their ice cream and they just want to eat their ice cream, but somehow, they're being pushed towards, just leave the ice cream on the entrance because we're gonna show you a bigger ice cream here and we're gonna give you a nicer one. But it's never coming. So and also like one last thing, I mean, things go so fast, but if we take a step back and we are humble and we look how history is like much longer than and bigger than we are, we're probably like in an historical moment that has only started, unfortunately, that started 10 years ago, which again, in historical terms, is very little. And it's the far right, conquering the cultural hegemony with their values. And we are in this process, I think. I would love that it finishes soon enough, but I think that history has shown that, it's going to take a while until we can defeat, and gain the cultural hegemony back. It took in the previous historical moment, two world wars, yeah, to come back to, yeah, unfortunately. So I'm not saying that we are like gonna go into a third world war. I hope not, but that's what history, it's a fact, yeah. We had two world wars and it took us, a huge trauma to understand, oh my God, maybe let's go back to understanding that people's benefits, people, welfare is important. And I think that we are not close to that now. Now, what is important in general terms is the protecting the wealth of the super rich. That's what's in the values. Of course, things are not black or white. Yeah, I have to say also, like, watching what's happening in Minnesota gives me some hope, and there's other like sources of hope. So things are not black and white. Thing the you know this is not lost, but I think that this is where we are right now.
Yeah, and I think obviously, yeah, you point to sort of places where there's pockets of resistance, and I think that we know that there's always resistance, and there's always some hope to be drawn from that. And in many ways as well, it's like it's interesting, right? Like that, even thinking about saying like watching what's happening in Minnesota, like the way that I've been watching that, I think much like everybody is a stream of short little videos that I didn't really seek out. They just sort of got presented to me, and it's like that's how I got that information about it. And knowing that there's someone looking at the same app that I'm looking at, getting a stream of short little videos that are talking about these protesters being terrorists, a threat, like, and some of it including just AI generated lies about what's happening, right? And then also obviously then I spend my time having to do the like AI investigations myself about like what am I looking at a real thing when I look at this video, right? And like I didn't ask to become an AI investigator, but here we are. I have to do that every day now. And I wonder about like that sort of like as our attention gets pointed through these sort of increasingly siloed experiences and what that does for our politics, especially when obviously progressive politics is one of collective action and of democratic decision making, and as we're all in our little bubbles, and taking in information in such a isolated way and such an overwhelming way often, what that sort of does to our, I guess, like individual mindsets, but also to like that collective political experience.
Again, sorry to go back to the basics, but I think that's for me, like, we don't need to reinvent the wheel. Why coming up with AI non-real things is allowed? Like, why we don't allow and we punish like businesses and companies that lie over whatever they produce? Yeah, so why aren't we regulating the fact that people are using AI to lie when we do regulate and we don't agree with other business sectors doing it? So I would like to push our representatives like to actually do their work in the sense of like please regulate a business so that we can all benefit from it. But not only them. And right now, this is exactly what is happening. Business like digital platforms are not regulated, and they're just abusing because there's it's the jungle. They're just abusing of citizens for their own benefit. So I think that yeah, we still have a little bit of a way to understand progressives that guys, we need to get this done. I mean, any social conquer has not been without a struggle, yeah, because the whole system is kind of like a set so that the strongest benefit from it. So I don't want to now go into the bigger question of capitalism and blah blah blah, but like the whole system is set for the strongest to benefit, and every social conquer that we've had has not been without work. And I think that our main kind of like fight is also to kind of like get this business under control, and we will eventually, we will, because it's for the benefit of much more people, so we will understand, but it's going to take some time. I think that this should be our goal in the end, and AI goes into this, let's say, basket.
Great. I think, yeah, we need to regulate these companies. In many ways, I also, I think we need to be experimenting with the fact that these are all American companies, and
Exactly.
the fact that we are surrendering our sovereignty in a lot of ways to have them control so much of our data, our
Yes.
information now,
Yes.
and just the ways that we function as a society, and the ways that we coordinate. And that obviously this is a challenge. I know that in Australia, and I think this varies around the world, but a lot of countries, Australia is definitely included in this, are not just not regulating these companies, but are actually actively inviting, and especially in the purpose of AI, trying to incentivize more and
Yes.
more and more of this before we've even really understood what it is and really thought about thought. I mean, you know, even though like, in a lot of ways, I hate to say that we do know the harms of it. The harms of it are well documented. You know, it's like actually they're well documented harms to this technology. We're just sort of wishing them away in a at a
Yes.
practical sense. And so I think knowing that, you know, we need to take on the power of these companies as we do many companies that are trying to do harm to
Exactly.
us and to society, and that that's going to require a bit of political power on our part, and that we need to sort of, it's this sort of catch 22. We need to win elections in order to, and we need to, you know, elect more progressive and bold progressive politicians who are accountable to our movements and to and engaging in the needs of the people and not big business. But in order to do that, we need to fight on the terrain that we're on, which is currently entirely dominated by these companies, and especially in this, you know, the information ecosystem that we live in is as you rightly pointed out, it's a mall. We're in a shopping mall. And
Yes.
so I kind of want to maybe bring this conversation back to sort of talking about what we can do in terms of what progressives can do, and things that you've seen that are towards that goal of growing our political power and growing our a kind of democratic engagement in politics. Is there anything that you've seen, like, or can you kind of describe to me sort of like what you've been looking at that sort of inspired you in the last year or so that you're seeing as like really exciting trends that we can, ways that we can sort of start to take on and operate in this environment?
So the overarching kind of like understanding that I think that progressives and our bold politicians need to understand is that they're not on their own. Yeah, they're not on their own. They're not solely themselves or their party. In Europe, the parties do play a big role because our electoral systems favor party as a structures rather than candidates. So I think that there is a bit of a difference between the European world and the Anglo-Saxon world, and that includes the UK, yeah, I would say. So first of all, our political parties and candidates need to understand that they're not alone, that the citizens are with them. But in order to, you know, to allow the citizens to support them on the struggle of represent our values, they need to take them into account, and they need to look for channels where to include them on their, let's say, political activity. And currently, political parties are far from understanding that in their, you know, way of doing politics, they should take citizens on board. And let me tell you the difference between one fascist party, one far right party, and one progressive. So progressives are still thinking that, you know, citizens, they don't have instruments to engage these citizens. So, you know, the way that we take, like, progressives take politics so importantly, that we think that, you know, data-driven things are the only ones that are matter, and, you know, the technicality of the policy is the most important thing, and common sense and rationality is going to, you know, give us, you know, the right that we hold, and sometimes even like the moral superiority that we think that we have. And far-right parties understand, yes, but people are angry, and where people are angry, they're willing to fight for you. So it doesn't matter what they feel, or just let's use this anger for our benefit. Yeah. So what progressives has not understood is that rationality is not what is going to engage people on your fight, but it's you know, it's allowing the people, you know, to participate when they are angry, when they're happy, when they are willing to have a say, when they're willing to, you know, go again. So there is, I don't see any progressive party slash candidate in Europe that is so inspiring. We're working on it, and we're hope that that we, you know, we will have certain some victories. One of the, you say, what inspire you? One of the, and that's the obvious, but I cannot ignore it. One of the most biggest inspiration that we've had lately, of course, is Zoran Mamdani, and because of the authenticity, or like the truth behind him, to listen to people. So you know, we were all like very inspired when he said, "We managed to mobilize 1 million people. We managed to knock on 3 million doors." Well, you need an army of people. So there was channels to participate in Mamdani's campaign, so you could be part of this. Yeah, and I don't see any progressive in Europe that has understood that. Oh, I have an army of people that are willing to fight for me on this or on that, and maybe I have channels to allow these people to be part of my campaign. And I'm not talking even about fundraising, which is the lowest kind of like participatory tool. Yeah, you give your little 5 euros that I could spend on something else to you, and then I'm gonna feel attached to you, and I'm gonna, you know. But this is the lowest. But there's much, so many like other ways, like sending them survey to tell them what to ask them, what they think of a proposal that you have in mind, of what's your next parliamentary thing, or gathering them in an event to maybe hear from them, or like, so there's so many tools that we could actually like allow citizens to participate at scale with digital, and I don't see any in Europe inspiring examples of this. We've had certain little things, but at the scale of allowing them to win, not yet. And for example, Mam Dani has been a great inspiration, and I think it's also it has meant for progressives an example of, yes, it's possible, guys. We can beat these guys with their own tools, with our own tools, if we make those tools ours. If we understand, you know, that citizens play a role, that emotions play a role, if we are not lecturing everybody, if we take into account the contradictions, if we are okay with all this, we can win them. And Mam Dani won them. And he took all these elements into account, and he offered people to engage with his campaign. And he came up with imaginative ways of feeling people engaged. Yeah. I mean, the little, like his videos, but his videos, it's not like when you go to a candidate and he's, oh, yeah, I need to do vertical videos. No, you need to communicate your thoughts. Vertical video is just a tool. But are you willing to communicate your thoughts? Oh, but if I say this, I'm going to be criticized. Oh, I mean, guy, it's a conversation and they're going to criticize you anyway. So, like, are you willing to hear? Are you willing to open up your ideas and your heart for people to have a say and collaborate with you on this struggle? And I think that's actually like what, you know, what Mam Dani has been showing us. There was other, yeah, there was other like small victories, but Mam Dani showed that it is possible to win. And this is what we're lacking lately. Yeah, we are like here in Spain, we do have a progressive government, and this government is inspiring, but it's the on the defense. Yeah, on the defense. So, you know, that's the difference between Mam Dani, for example, and Pedro Sanchez, is that Mam Dani won, Pedro Sanchez is defending himself. So we need to go to bring, you know, our government to the offense. And I think that this is what we need to achieve from progressives. Guys, go on the offense, because you have an army of people that share your values, that are willing to you know, to walk along with you in this battle. Yeah. So yeah, I would say that I would put Mam Dani as the top inspiration. There is others, but at least, you know, for me, he symbolizes the fact that it is possible to win. We can do it. We can do it, because he did it in New York, in the
He did
heart
it.
of capitalism.
He did it, and he did it under great opposition, and obviously an excellent campaign. I feel like it's become a bit of a cliche, but two progressives start talking, and we mentioned Mam Dani's campaign, but obviously it was an inspiring campaign. I think you've touched on a lot of the really important stuff about his authenticity and his ability to communicate really effectively. You also were talking a bit about like the way the far right uses anger, and finds ways to meet people in that place of anger that progressives often feel like, or at least I should maybe be a bit specific on this, but certainly a lot of the center left and traditional social democratic parties have seen that sort of uprising of energy as a threat on the left, and have actually tried to sort of manage it rather than to sort of embrace it. And that's, I feel like, a big core difference between sort of like these right-wing parties that are starting to really grasp a bit of energy, but the left is sort of like that energy is there, but it's sort of being
Yes.
it's sidelined by a lot of parties. And Mam Dani showed exactly like that, the long history of socialist organizing, but also especially the sort of like post Bernie Sanders, post Occupy Wall Street sort of socialist organizing in New York that has gotten to a place where it can elect a mayor, and that's a really
Exactly.
exciting, and that obviously he is a part of that movement. He understands how that connection between movement and politics. The other thing I was thinking about, I feel like we're going to get the bingo card here when I mention Zach Polanski and talk about there was an article, I think it was Adam Ramsey wrote, about sort of the transformation of the UK Greens to sort of get to this point with Zach Polanski. And one of the lines that really stood out for me, it got, in the group chats with all my friends, we all sort of quoted it, pulled it out of like, a lot of progressives seem to have this idea. It's sort of a choice, when we're speaking, it's sort of like this trying to be like controversial or not controversial, when really I'm paraphrasing, obviously, but the actual choice is to be controversial or be ignored, and that we're really afraid of sort of like the negatives of like if we speak, if we get it wrong, and if someone's going to attack us, and things are, we're gonna, and various problems, obviously attacks coming from a right-wing press, obviously in Australia, our Rupert Murdoch, you're welcome. We gave him to the world. This is a very right-wing dominated media environment, so obviously you're likely to get those attacks. But also in, within the left and within our movements, we have a habit of attacking our leaders as well.
Yes.
And I feel like we move in with a lot of fear in these spaces. And something that that's been exciting about, I think, both Zach and Mamdani's sort of campaigns is that they've really embraced the sense that, at an emotional level, which I think is what you were getting at earlier, that they're speaking to people at a more emotional level, who understand the fear and the frustration and the struggles, especially, have been amplified post-pandemic, but have obviously been brewing in late capitalism for quite some time.
Yeah, I think that the center left needs to acknowledge, and maybe they need some time, but I mean, a time that we don't have, but like they need to acknowledge that when it comes to this prudency, I don't know if that's an English word, but like to be prudent, like that the system, people are angry because the system was not delivering for these people, and they were rightly so being angry. Yeah, so. And that's where this prudency needs to be kind of like amended, yeah. And so in order to get this army of people that share your values, because I strongly believe that center left are pro-democratic people. Like, I mean, I share the values with them, yeah. But like, in order to bring this army of people in your struggle, they need to understand like the way they were doing until now did not function because it didn't deliver to the people. So, I have my own personal perspective, and I think that here the key issue is very easy. It's very, very, very easy. It's very difficult to implement, but it's very easy to understand. It's the share of wealth. So it's very easy. If the wealth that this planet owns is kind of like more evenly shared among people, violence will go down. And that's what, that's what people claim. Look, I want to have a decent life, and I'm willing to, to do my part of the job. And the system was not delivering on this. People were doing their part of the job, going to work, fulfilling laws, behaving in a shared society, and having solidarity towards and inclusive and blah 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 blah. But the system was not delivering. So, and that's what the center need to understand. Hey guys, we want, that you are part of of this struggle, but you need to understand that this defending the status quo is it's not the right answer, because the status quo did not deliver for me. And I think that probably you can call it extreme left, you can call it, I think that finally the center left will also realize that this is about having giving citizens a reason to make them their representatives, and it's because they will be delivering an answer of I know that the system didn't work, and that's the new answer that I propose to you. I think that Mamdani did deliver something very key. So you're gonna, if I freeze the rent, you're gonna have a decent life. So you fulfill your part of the job, yeah, in this society, but I'm going to guarantee this decency. And then, of course, like free buses, the childcare, the public supermarkets, but like freezing the rent is like, housing is your. You need to sleep somewhere. You want your kids to be warm at night. You want your parents, when they're old, to be taken care in like, is it in your place or somewhere else? But like, it's the first kind of like guarantee for decency, yeah, and dignity. I think health is the other one, and I know that the US is a different world there. I cannot be so like enough proud of being European with the kind of like public health system, with its own challenges. But like, so So center left will eventually understand that, defending the status quo is not going to be the way to kind of like reclaim the majority, because the majority of people are saying, hey, the system did not provide to me what I needed, and that's why I'm now complaining. And I think that that was a little bit the secret that the far right understood also. The system did not deliver, and that's why they're portraying to be the anti-system right now. Here in Spain, Vox represents the cool anti-system option. Guy, the system that they want to implement is far from being fair for regular people, for working class people, yeah, for regular citizens, far from being fair. But they are this is a step after, yeah? They are now representing the anti-system voice, and people want to change because the status quo is not delivering from them. So that's why I think that we're unfortunately in a wave of of far right kind of like value hegemony, because those are being the voice representing or channeling the claim of the people saying it didn't work for me. And slowly the progressives are understanding, yes, that this is happening, but it's going to take a while. It's going to take a while. But meanwhile, Mamdani's Polanski's of the world will kind of like show that that's the way forward, and slowly we will again gain the majority on this side, of the ideological spectrum. It's going to take a while, I think. If you look into the center left parties around the world, we do have like nice examples within Australia and Canada, for example, but let's see how it evolves. And hopefully, yeah, in this kind of like right wing hegemony, let's see if they manage to represent a pole of inspiration slash attraction in building, the more progressive or in working towards a progressive hegemony. Yeah.
No, and I think that like what you're talking about here of I think is such an important point that of like actually the bare minimum we need to acknowledge that the system isn't working and or at least it's not delivering. I mean, it's not delivering for people and that we've allowed the right in to sort of claim that. That space of dissatisfaction and anger. And obviously, pointing out the irony that, these far right parties are largely upholders of the status quo, largely funded by the same people who've been funding right wing politics that made this mess to begin with. They're all mostly fossil fuel interests, right? It's the same power force
Yes.
behind
Yes.
all of right wing politics through most of history. But the sense that like we've ceded to them this ground is obviously silly and it's something that I think I worry a little bit as using I guess the context here in Australia of like the Labor Party that they feel it feels like they're just trying to play it safe because they're so afraid. And I worry that, that actually that is exactly the wrong strategy in this moment. I guess that's a great I'm just conscious of time, and I think I maybe want to just direct us to look ahead a little bit into 2026 and where you think we should be, or where progressive political parties and organizations should be directing their energy in 2026.
So let me again like go back to my territory, and then we can go to the world. But like in Europe, 2026 is kind of like a transition year, because there's no huge elections foreseen in 26. Like in the sense of like, yes, there is parliamentary elections in some countries, but I think that there is no like we don't have France and Germany and Spain and blah, blah. So in Europe, I would like that progressives take the regional elections that are going to be happening in Germany, in Spain, municipal elections here and there, to also understand and have like some wins in that regard, because changing people like progressives parties understanding on how to talk to people, it takes time, yeah. You don't change mindsets in immediately. So for me, 2026 is kind of like an opportunity for make them in a safer way understand that, okay, it's a regional election, so maybe you can do things different way, and maybe to prove them that there is possibility for wins. But I think that there's also going to be important elections, if I'm not mistaken. I think that we have Brazil and we have Colombia in Latin America. There's going to be the midterms. So I really am hoping that there is some signs of progressives winning in those elections. Yeah, I really hope that we need energy to feed our souls to keep this fight. Yeah, I know that I'm not going to give up, and it's not me. I know that a lot of progressives are not willing to give up because we don't want this world, and we just, are not going to stay silent until, we get a place that we think that is fairer. And once we've conquered an Isle of Fairness, we want the next one. So, and I'm not going to stop, and a lot of people are not going to stop, but we need some sort of inspiration. So I really hope that 2026 also bring a change in the US with the midterms. I'm not following exactly like all the candidates, and I'm not following who are the inspiring voices. At some stage I would like to kind of learn a little bit more, but I really do have the hope that the midterms come with a are a sign of hope for, oh my God, I mean, this country that is governed by a cuckoo person, a crazy person, but not only a crazy, but like a man that asked is at the service of a specific business sector. So I hope that, there is a result that puts a bit of a control on this, that puts a little bit of like boundaries to this. And I hope that Colombia and Brazil are also like stayed on the progressive side. We've lost Chile, unfortunately, this year. And then I hope that progressives in Europe also use these 26 to get them their things together to face, like France will face a very important election, and we cannot afford to lose more governments to the enemy because because we need to really we need to we're here to win the this hegemony. Yeah, and we're here to make people life better, and the enemy is not going to make people life better. We know that they are at the service of certain powers, you just said, like tech companies, but also oil companies and all this, and like, so we're not against these people per se. Like oil companies is just, guys, you are messing up our planet, and my kids are going to have to live in a place that is much worse just because you want to earn money. So that's also a message of like common sense for progressives. This is why, we want to fight these companies, is because, the well-being of your kids, not because we're just, crazy people that love revolutions. Yeah. So that's what 2026 here in Europe, it's going to be about, like focusing on certain regional elections in here and there. And I hope in the world, and I'm sorry, I apologize already because I'm a complete ignorant on the African world, and I know there's going to be elections there, and I know there is great people. I was talking to people from Nigeria last week, so there is great people also, fighting for progressive values. And I'm also a very big ignorant on the Southeast world, like the Asian world, where there is also a lot of people, playing magnificent battles against autocrats, like in India and in Korea. And I mean, there is a lot of like progressive, and sometimes we are so self-centered. But I hope that there is also good signs from those countries. It wasn't that far away that I was looking and reading about how South Koreans were also like fighting their government about for abusive behavior. So I really hope that 2026 is a year where we, see some inspiration of progressives, understanding that this fight needs to be fought with the people, and allowing them to participate in those fights. So doing better campaigns, using digital tools to include people in the political fight, and that wins source that serve as a source of inspiration to keep this struggle, because we're not winning it, so we just cannot give up, and we need to keep that struggle.
I was going to ask you if you had any final thoughts, but that almost feels like a nice point to finish it on. But I nevertheless, is there anything else you would like to add to this conversation before we?
Maybe a message to the people, because I know that it's tiring, and sometimes, it's you're desperate, and it's painful. Yeah, when you just see bad people, like and bad things happening to the people, I know that it's very frustrating. But I want to remind all of us that like we're not alone. That there is so many good things and good fights happening all over the world. Again, I was proactively searching for inspiration through the Minnesota like things that were happening and how people are so smart and how people manage to actually get things done. And even if they don't want us to learn about, there is a lot of things happening. So we're not alone. This struggle is not over. So we shouldn't, you know, let's not give up, yeah? And whenever we are desperate, let's take a breath and remember that you know, it's possible to have a better world, and we are on it, and you know, we're much more powerful than what we thought. And maybe just one last thing, there is a very powerful tool that we don't always use at its most. And I don't have the skill, but like it's humor, yeah? Humor also is like you know, a skill that allows us to kind of like yeah, disincentivate aspirational shit. So like it's a powerful tool that that sometimes we just don't use. So so I would like to encourage everybody also to like kind of twist their humor skills and to give room to all these comedians and all these people that do have you know, a role and play a great part on delegitimizing some ideas that, you know, sometimes they look obvious and by far they're not. So, and we don't have the tools to sometimes, okay, what can I say? What's the message to counter this? I mean, just make him look ridiculous, but that's what he's saying is so ridiculous. So let's go to the basics. And sometimes humor is a very underutilized kind of tool to do this.
I love this. Let's finish on a note of praising humor. Bring some humor to
Yes.
it. And I think, you know, I mean, obviously we spoke about Mamdani, and I think, you know, he's funny. And before him, Bernie Sanders
Very.
is very funny, underrated funny.
Yes. Yes. Yes.
And in other ways, obviously it's a sort of different, it's a twisted sense of humor and a much
Yes.
sicker one. But Trump is quite funny, you know, like that these
Well,
people have humor is
exactly. Exactly.
important.
All the time they're using humor to put their message further. There's always like several channels, and there's always a humor channel one. And in progressive voices, I very often say, okay, who's making fun of this? Why aren't we making fun of the fact that, you know, women need to be at home? Come on, come
We're
on.
so
That's
earnest,
yes.
you know. Yeah, I guess that's something. It's like we're earnest and serious because the things we're doing, you know, we earnestly do want to improve people's lives
Exactly.
and fix these systems, and the stakes are serious, but you know, life is
But the
it's
means can be
too
a lot.
important.
Yeah.
It's too
Yes.
important to take it seriously, you know, as I like to say about many things.
Exactly.
This has been it's been a really energizing conversation, and it's been really nice to get to know you,
Same
Ryan. This
here.
has been great.